Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour, stories and articles about the American West, produced at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading from True West Magazine, History of the American Frontier, October 2023 edition. Tombstone, A Reckoning, by True West Editors. 30 years after the popular film's release, it might be the most influential Western of all time. In 1993, Walt Disney's Hollywood Pictures greenlighted the biggest Western film the conservative motion picture company had ever produced. Unforeseen by Disney's then-boss, Michael Eisner, Tombstone would become the studio's most iconic and influential Western since the first episode of Davy Crockett aired on ABC's Walt Disney's Disneyland on December 15, 1954. But Eisner, who had helmed the storied entertainment company since 1985, did not sign off on the R-rated picture without a true Disney ace up his sleeve, Kurt Russell. Russell, who was 42 at the time of production, had made his first movie for Walt Disney in 1966 at the age of 15. Russell is not shy about his loyalty to the studio. "The Disney years were my education in the film business," he recalled years later. Russell had not starred in a Disney picture since 1975 until Eisner brought him back in 1992 for the lead role in Captain Ron. Russell knew the studio was making a huge investment in him and that his career was at stake if the new Western failed. And unknown to most of the public, Russell was the reason the film was financed, and, most likely, even the reason it was ever produced. As he told True West's Henry Cabot Beck in 2006, he had gone and got $25 million from Andy Vajna, Synergy Pictures, to make the movie. Russell had read Kevin Jarre's original script and wanted to make it immediately. With the casting and deal in hand, with Jarre to direct, Russell and the film company went to work on location in Tucson, Arizona in May of 1993. But that is when Jarre's inability to direct the large ensemble cast and stay on time and on budget was questioned. Soon thereafter, the studio executives handed the reins to Russell to recruit a replacement director, George P. Cosmatos, and bring the picture in on time and on budget. And Russell did. 30 years later, Russell's knowledge of entertaining and filmmaking can still be seen across every frame of Tombstone. Also evident is his love and respect for the genre to which he and his father, Bing Russell, owed so much of their careers. No other Hollywood film has had as much influence on Old West popular culture, literature, frontier law and order, scholarship, and tourism. One of the main reasons why is that the movie is based on real people and historical events that have sparked debate and controversy among historians, authors, and fans for nearly a century. The second reason is why Kevin Jarre's meticulously researched script, which has taken on mythic status itself. In honor of Tombstone's influence, we decided that it was time for a reckoning, to pause and have a good conversation with our contributors about the film, its historical characters, and what we have learned about them since 1993, and ultimately, why it all matters. And like any family, our True West family doesn't necessarily agree on everything about the legacy of Tombstone. But isn't that why we love Old West history so much? Isn't that a daisy? Tombstone was released in December 1993. 6 months later, Kevin Costner's Wyatt Earp was released as well. But the biopic Western never gained the traction or fan following of its old-fashioned ensemble-style competitor. Both of the big-budget films tipped their respective hats to Westerns that had recent box office and critical success. Young Guns 1 and 2, Quigley Down Under, Dances with Wolves, and Unforgiven, the latter two recipients of the Oscar for Best Picture. Since then, film historians and writers have debated the importance and cultural influence of these films in the pantheon of Western films. But again and again, one film rises to the top of the conversation, Tombstone. So we decided to put the question to our experts. Is Tombstone the greatest Western, And should Tombstone be considered as significant to the popularity of Western history and culture as Lonesome Dove, Dances with Wolves, Yellowstone, and Walt Disney's Davy Crockett? Tombstone is to Davy Crockett as the Korean War is to World War II. No comparison. Tombstone is something of a cult movie, like Blade Runner and sci-fi, with quite a following. But Disney's Crockett was a cultural phenom that rocked the nation and the world. Paul Andrew Hutton, historian. Of course, well, I might be a bit prejudiced as I produced it, but heck yes. Although High Noon, Magnificent Seven, and a few others, Unforgiven, Shane, et al., are almost as good. Bob Mizorowski, Tombstone producer. The reverence for this film in certain quarters continues to remain a source of bafflement to me. Kirk Ellis, screenwriter, author, producer. I would place it among the greatest westerns. However, it would be hard to identify which is best. High Noon, Shane, and Stagecoach are among other greats that would have to be considered. Casey Tieferteller, historian. Although Tombstone has a huge and devoted following, it rarely makes the top of the great Western film lists. Tombstone is a story set in the West rather than a story about the West. Transfer all the plot points to gangland Chicago in the 1930s. The film's opening monologue compares it to modern-day New York or Los Angeles. And you would still have a good story. Victoria Wilcox, author. I'm not sure there is a single greatest Western. There are a number of films that qualify as among the greatest Westerns. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Searchers, True Grit, both movies, Jeremiah Johnson, My Darling Clementine, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, and Tombstone certainly ranks among them. Max McCoy, author. Tombstone is the greatest Western of the second half of the 20th century, hands down. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance garners that appellation for the first half of the 20th century. Tombstone is based on real people, real locations, real events. While it was made to be entertaining, it also includes many actual events involving real people, portrayed by actors in a most convincing manner. Historical fiction that hits the mark for accuracy. Roy Young, historian. No, I loved it, but now I turn it off after the OK Corral gunfight. I can't watch the Vendetta ride where Earp kills over 375 bad guys. Stupid. Love the costumes and dialogue and an excellent rendition of the gunfight, but it is far from being the number one Western. Tom Ross, artist. I would say Tombstone is the greatest Western made in modern times. It may not be the best of all time, but nothing recently seems to top it. Why? Several reasons, including the historical accuracy, the authenticity of the set, costuming, and all else, but most importantly, the dramatic story that was executed so well by the actor's ability. The dialogue was unusually original without being superfluous. The screenplay was tops. Kurt House, historian. No, I believe The Searchers is the number one greatest Western. It's a timeless, tragic tale revealing the conflicting darkness and light in humanity set against the magnificent backdrop of the American Southwest. To be truly a classic, a Western must show the grandeur of the West, and The Searchers does just that. Bill Markley, historian. It was a great hit, but a great movie? Not even close. It's not even the best movie about the OK Corral. That honor goes to John Ford's My Darling Clementine, which doesn't get one fact right, but as a movie is cinematic poetry. Johnny D. Boggs, historian, author. Tombstone definitely belongs right up there among Hollywood's great Westerns. I don't mind movies that get it wrong, because at least the story of the West is out there for people to see, and one hopes it arouses their curiosity to seek the truth. Marshall Trimble, historian. Yes, Tombstone is the greatest Western movie ever made. I can't think of another Western as influential. It may not be great as acting or theater, but it spoke to people's spirit. There are better dramas, and John Wayne taught us how to be men. Kurt and Val taught us how about being our better selves. Doug Hocking, historian. I always say that if you do not watch the violent, overwrought beginning and end of Tombstone, In Between is probably the finest Western ever filmed. The costumes, sets, language, detail, and drama are beyond outstanding. John Bossenecker, historian. That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me. In 1993, two reasons that Tombstone went into production in Arizona were Kevin Jarre's script and Kurt Russell's desire to make the film as accurate as a Western film could be, while remaining entertaining. The film's producers, screenwriter, and principal actors all had a passion for the genre, and it was brought to bear in all the film's departments, from locations to costuming, the film sets to tack, props, and rolling stock. The film's crew put all of their efforts into making the film as accurate as possible. Did they get it all right? No, but they weren't making a documentary either. The efforts paid off. Popular audiences were entertained, critics praised it, and Western historians, for the most part, appreciated it. Was it the greatest Western? That question may never be answered, but in our humble opinion at True West, it may be the most influential, at least in the past 30 years, especially for the town of Tombstone, and Earp, Holiday, and Tombstone scholars and novelists. But don't take our word for it. We've asked our experts to weigh in. Did Tombstone propel and sustain the popularity of the Old West forward, including the popularity of Tombstone as a tourist destination since 1993? Yes, Tombstone Town and movie live on. I first saw a dying Tombstone Town in 1988, and I've watched it come to life since 1993. Doug Hocking. Tombstone's popularity in today's culture is probably its most important contribution to the Western. Bunker de France, co-host of Voices of the West. Oh, hell yes. It was not only a boon for tourism in the town, but for Old West reenactors, replica guns, and clothing. It also spurred a great interest in the Wyatt Earp saga. Michael F. Blake, historian. Although Tombstone is entertainment in its purest form, what aspects of it are correct historically? The costuming and attention to detail were excellent. There are times when you can almost feel the Arizona heat yourself with all those beads of sweat on screen. There are some wonderfully accurate tidbits in there, and the portrayal of the Earps Cowboys feud is solid enough, considering it is an artistic impression of events. James B. Mills, historian. Tombstone took the sepia-toned Western films that came before and dumped them on their heads. For the first time, we had bright and flamboyant clothing, newly painted buildings, accurate language, guns, and clothing. Plus, the film was shot in the same area as the events portrayed. Eric Wright, historian. The physical setting of Tombstone and most of the extras were reenactors rather than extras. The all-star supporting cast was excellent. Their clothing was accurate. Hollywood is much better at getting it right when using reenactors instead of extras who don't know which end of a cow gets up first. Marshall Trimble. What historical details in the films would you change if given the chance? I wouldn't change a thing about the film, even to make it more historically accurate. Max McCoy. I would get rid of the first 5-minute bloodbath and the last 15-minute bloodbath. Those events never happened, and the Tombstone saga is so exciting, it did not need such exaggeration. John Bossenecker. I could write a lengthy discourse on things that are wrong with the movie, but the key flaw is the departure from Kevin Jarre's script. Whatever Jarre's failings as a director, his original script told a better story. Gary Roberts, historian. Kevin Jarre's script was a character study of the relationship between Wyatt and Doc. George Cosmatos eliminated much of the interplay and development of the supporting characters and turned the film into an action flick. John Farkas, historian. Not sure I would change anything, given that the movie is entertainment. Don't think viewers really care about the history. Harry Alexander, co-host of Voices of the West. If I could change one aspect of the film historically, I'd change the opening scene with the cowboys at the wedding. That was just awful. Linda Womack, historian. Today's Tombstone is a product of Tombstone. I tell people if you go to Tombstone, don't expect to find a historical place, but one that reflects the movie. If you can go there embracing that, you'll have a great time. If not, it'll be a bitter disappointment. Brad Courtney, historian. I think the movie helped. In fact, having grown up in New Jersey, I didn't even know Tombstone existed until after the movie came out. Sherry Monahan, historian. I'm sure it's not historically accurate, as no writer was there recording conversations, etc. All we can do when relating historical events fictionally is say, this is what he would have said and done, or so I believe, and every writer would write it differently. Larry J. Martin, author and co-founder of Wolfpack Publishing. Well, the scene that seems to get the most criticism from historians is the opening church act. Any purist will immediately tell you that that never happened. But if you think about it, in a way, it really did. In the early 1880s, the cowboys brutally ambushed a group of Mexican smugglers coming across the border into the United States. I feel the movie is trying to depict that incident. Also, I think the scene was necessary, as right from the very beginning, from this depiction. We all learn who the bad guys really were. And they were bad. For the sake of the rest of the movie, the lines have now been drawn. David DeHaas, historian. I'm your Huckleberry. At the heart of Tombstone is a classic Shakespearean in style feud, the cowboys versus the Earps. Screenwriter Kevin Jarre did not have to stray too far from the truth to create an entertaining screenplay with more than a nod to history and the greatest Greek and Roman dramatists. Unlike the ancient myths and legends of the old world, the mythic lore of 1880s Tombstone, Arizona is less than 150 years old. But like a famous sage once said, life imitates art more often than not. And when it comes to real history, very few years in the Old West are as imitated as the time of the cowboys versus the Earps between 1879 and 1882. Many critics and film historians laud Tombstone for its attempt at historical accuracy. Rightly so. Screenwriter Jarre is given a great deal of the credit. He recognized the classic drama at the heart of the legendary events and the historical characters that William Shakespeare would have relished to dramatize in an ensemble for the ages. Kurt Russell also is recognized as the magic of the ageless drama in Jarre's script, especially in the well-known characters, the Earps, Doc Holliday, and the Cowboys, and the famous gunfight at the OK Corral. The unique amalgamation of myth, history, and legendary characters was perfect for a classic Western. Of course, when you step into the lane of history in Western film, historians and fans will have something to say about it. We asked our experts, why are Wyatt Earp, the Earp family, Doc Holliday, and the conflict with the cowboys still important to understanding Old West history? Or are they? Here's what they had to say. They're not important as history, but collectively, their story touches on just about every aspect of Western culture. Family, mining, cattle theft, the border with Mexico, federal versus local law, lingering animosities from the Civil War, the emerging influence of women, and the opportunity to start a new life. Alan Barra. The real story of what happened in Tombstone is Greek tragedy, but the movie is entertaining and moody, and I love it. Mary Doria Russell, author. The Earps and Tombstone take on a Shakespearean tragedy theme that draws people in, coupled with the close friendship between Wyatt and Doc, a devoted friendship many wish they could have in life. It really sparks an interest in people. Michael Blake. I don't think there's much more to be gleaned in any medium from a tawdry Arizona political struggle that has no real importance in shaping of the American history. Kirk Ellis. Tombstone tells the story following the money, the mining camps and boom towns, and how those places, because they were young and not fully established, had growing pains that were sometimes terrible and tragic. Brad Courtney. They are still important because they are examples of the struggles for power that were a driving force in the West, but the entire story needs to be told, and Tombstone didn't do that. Mark Boardman. For a roughly 30-second arrest gone bad, it sure gets a lot of ink in film. Most important events in Western history deserve serious attention, but Earps, Doc, Clantons, et al. Still sell. Because who doesn't love greed, murder, revenge, and long walks to a gunfight? Johnny D. Boggs. It was part of an era, just like Billy the Kid flicks and John Chisholm riding across the silver screen. Were they really like that? I doubt it, but we choose to think so. And we all need heroes, no matter how flawed. Linda Sanchez, historian. The Earp Tombstone saga is about enduring issues that are relevant to a free society. What does the citizenry do when outlawry becomes intolerable? This has been a continuing issue through American history as we try to balance the rights of the accused against protection of society. It is the same question we are asking today as our streets grow increasingly unsafe. If our leaders understood the Earp story, they would not keep making the same mistakes that have been made generation after generation. Casey Tieferteller. It is critical to understand these events in context of our modern era, in which politicians and activists, people who know nothing about law enforcement, are trying to reform policing. The principal purpose of police work is not to perform social services, though that is an important aspect of the job. The main purpose is to keep our communities safe from predatory criminals and to give officers the tools they need to protect society. The Earp boys, with their checkered careers as pimps and gamblers, redeem themselves by breaking the back of the largest outlaw gang of the American frontier. John Bossenecker. It was one of the most interesting feuds in frontier history, with some truly colorful characters, and certainly helps us understand how a conflict could escalate into violence in the pressure cooker environment of a boomtown like Tombstone. I think the feud also illustrates the conflict between metropolitan and pastoral ideals in frontier times. James B. Mills. In 1881, Tombstone very much represented the conflict of what was left of the Old West, resisting having to give away to a New West, the ongoing spread of civilization. The film portrays that tension. Laws were being enacted to curb traditional cowboy behavior, and there was less tolerance in the emerging New West for hell-raising and wrestling. From a romantic perspective, that's too bad. But the Old West was becoming old in the eyes of families who were building schools and churches and businesses in Arizona and New Mexico and voted for safety over shoot-em-ups. Tom Clavin, historian. The story is less important for our understanding of Old West history than it is for our understanding of how we've understood Old West history. Popularly understood, it's an archetypal story, a myth. Andrew Patrick Nelson, historian. I'm a woman, I like men. When critics and fans discuss elements of the movie Tombstone, one of the major topics is the role of women in the film. In Jarre's original script, which Russell read and pushed into production, the roles of the Earp and Holiday wives and girlfriends were well-developed and potentially had more screen time than in the final release, including the director's cut. Like many Westerns, the female characters in Tombstone symbolically provide key support to their male counterparts while also adding sexual tension to the drama. Despite the classic female Western roles, Tombstone's women, Allie Earp, Maddie Earp, Louisa Earp, Josephine Marcus, and Kate Elder, are based on historical characters. The two characters who play the most pivotal roles in the film and have received the most attention from historians are Dana Delaney's Josephine and Joanna Pacula's Kate. Because of the growth of the role of women in filmmaking and in leading roles during the past three decades, we decided to put it to our historians and ask them some questions about Josephine, Kate, and the women of Tombstone. Are the life stories of Josie Earp and Mary Catherine Big Nose Kate, Elder, Horany, as important as Wyatt and Doc's to really understanding Old West history? Kate's life story is certainly more important than Josie's. Kate had a history with the Earps, and she didn't care for them, and with good reason. That's routinely left out of the tales of the Earps. It's significant because Doc Holliday was cemented in the Earp story. Wyatt Earp was the first to call Doc's lady friend Big Nose Kate. That's significant, too, and adds depth to the history of the trio. Chris Ince, historian. I'm not sure that any of the women were interpreted correctly. Allie is correctly portrayed as direct and unabashed in her opinion of Wyatt, but otherwise is not examined deeply. Maddie and Josie were not well interpreted. Maddie is stereotyped as an addict rather than explored deeply as a woman who gave the best of her life to Wyatt's schemes. Josie's complicated life and her desire to be someone special are unexplored. The Earp Holliday women led rough lives. Many were prostitutes. Pam Nowak, author. We only remember Wyatt because Sarah Josephine Marcus Earp became his posthumous publicist. She was the driving force behind Stuart Lake's 1931 bestseller, Wyatt Earp, Frontier Marshal. She wanted Wyatt presented as Achilles and Adonis and Galahad. She threatened lawsuits if Lake delivered anything less. As her dementia deepened, she pleaded, badgered, whined, and raged until Lake protested, "Mrs. Earp, you do not desire a biography, but a eulogy." Mary Doria Russell. Again, it would surprise me to learn there's anything new to say about either of these women. Here's an idea. How about celebrating the lives of some Western women who aren't defined by the men in their lives? Kirk Ellis. The lives of Josie Earp and Big Nose Kate Horney are indeed important to understanding the Old West. These women were not just side characters in the lives of famous men, but individuals with their own experiences and struggles. Their stories provide insight into the roles and experiences of women in a predominantly male-oriented historical narrative. Mike Bray, co-founder, Wolfpack Publishing. Strong women have and always will have influence with the men in their lives. Back then, women were supposed to be demure, so they were different. Maybe if Wyatt and Doc chose quiet women, their lives would have been different. But then again, it seems they were attracted to that type of a woman. Sherry Monahan, historian. Which Earp women were interpreted correctly in Tombstone? And whose lives need more screen time and written investigation? Maddie Blaylock. She was a former soiled dove with issues. Wyatt treated her badly. An actress, Dana Wheeler, made you feel sorry every moment of her troubles and eventual heartbreak. She didn't mind looking rough either. I always thought it was interesting how long-suffering Wyatt was with Doc, who had his own addictions, opposed to his lack of tolerance for Maddie in a similar circumstance. Perhaps if Josie hadn't seized the opportunity to prey on a vulnerable Wyatt, Maddie's outcome might have been different. But women are so vile to one another. Chris Ince. None of them were really interpreted to the degree they should have been, largely due to the little screen time they received. As mentioned, the ladies were all pushed largely into the background, except Josie, of course, who did not receive an accurate portrayal. Where are the tantalizing tidbits, like Allie and Maddie going out and getting drunk in Tombstone? Where are the intimate conversations that surely occurred when the men came home? How about when Maddie ran out into the yard with her hair in curlers when the shootout started? It would be great to see the saga of Tombstone told with all of the characters, not just the men involved. Jan Mackell Collins, historian. How the hell did we get ourselves into this? If you're a fan of the film Tombstone, you probably like its three A's actors: action and authenticity. Whether it was the storyline, the dialogue, the wardrobe, or the weapons, nowadays everything is green screen and CGI, computer-generated imagery. But in Tombstone, if it's on the screen, it's real. From the stunts to the sets, expansive vistas, majestic mountains, lightning and dust so thick you can taste it. John Farkas. For everyday people, stories and great characters are how we understood the past, and the Tombstone Trouble gives us everything we could ever want. Betrayal, bravery, bad guys, violence, romance, familiar love, revenge. It's the frontier as we know it. A great American story with a great American character, Wyatt Earp, in its lead. Flaws aside, he's the quintessential American hero. We see ourselves in him. Leo W. Banks, author and historian. The look, feel, sound, and tone of the movie was a jolt to the genre. It looked and sounded like 1880. Alan Barra. Tombstone will hold its importance in popular culture, such as Davy Crockett, Lonesome Dove, etc. But I have my doubts about Yellowstone. Chuck Parsons, historian. The movie went to great lengths to use historically accurate hats, guns, costumes, sets, and even the language of the day. It, therefore, looks and sounds like a true depiction of life in the 1880s in Arizona Territory. Peter Brand, historian. Contrary to popular opinion, none of the Tombstone Town scenes were actually filmed in Tombstone. John Farkas. I believe the story still has things to teach us if we are willing to go beyond simplistic stereotypes of good guys and bad guys to an appreciation of the forces at work shaping America in the final decades of the 19th century. There is still much to learn, and the Earps and their women, as well as their adversaries, can help us to understand not only Tombstone, but also ourselves. Gary Roberts. No, it's not the greatest Western, but it is great. The greatest Western would have been Tombstone, following the original script that Kevin Jarre wrote. But that wouldn't be a movie. It would have been a miniseries. Alan Barra. Dusty Cowtowns Meet the Boomtown Ethos. One of the strange trends in Western movie town sets that developed in the latter half of the 20th century is the idea that the towns needed to be old and weather-beaten. But in the case of Tombstone in 1880, it was brand new and booming with new buildings and new construction everywhere. It was a boom town, for crying out loud. Here's what the producer said about this. Mescal was a dusty, weather-beaten set when we got there. Our script called for a new town. Bustling, buildings going up, fresh paint, businesses working out of tents, whilst most permanent structures were going up. So we basically repaired and repainted every building. Then, of course, before we were finished, Quick and the Dead came in and started to age the entire set, building by building. Took it from freshly painted to aged a Western town. Ironic, no? Bob Mizorowski. A screenwriter actually listened to a historian. June 9, 1993. Above is the very prescient photograph of Jeff Morey and Kevin Jarre just before the end. It is significant for two reasons. The first is that screenwriter, Kevin Jarre, actually listened to someone who loves the real history of Tombstone and Wyatt Earp. And that person was Jeff Morey. The idea that the boomtown was brand new is from Jeff. The concept that the cowboys should look like landlocked pirates, colorful and not draped in dusty browns. That's Jeff. The clever lines, that is mostly Kevin being brilliant. But the bad news is his vision for directing did not fly, and he was fired less than 48 hours after this photo was taken. Out of solidarity with Jarre, Morey had his name taken off the movie credits. We thank them both for their service to our cause. Someday, someone is going to dust off their collaboration and make their brilliant vision whole, said the historian who took the photo. How to redeem Kevin Jarre's masterful script. This is not a prediction, This is a mandate. The remake of Tombstone will be a limited series of 10 episodes, and in the final episodes, or as bookends, it will feature Kurt Russell as an old Wyatt Earp and Dana Delany as his longtime partner, Sadie, trying in vain to cash in on his story in the final boomer outlaw town, Hollywood. The final word. The real Earp was not likable, but he was to be admired. Mark Warren. True West Magazine, October 2023 edition. The Western Godfather by Henry Cabot Beck. Kurt Russell spills the beans. It didn't surprise me that Kurt Russell was willing to go off topic during our interview. After all, it was the end of the day, and he was likely tired of telling the same handful of anecdotes about Poseidon, about nearly drowning during the production, about accidentally putting a hole in Josh Lucas's scalp, about peeing in the tank. And Russell loves to talk. I learned that 10 years ago when we wasted most of my interview time arguing libertarianism and Jeffersonian democratic principles when we were supposed to be discussing Snake Plissken and Escape from L.A. What did surprise me was how Russell was eager to talk about the movie Tombstone. As soon as I mentioned the famously troubled production of the beloved Western, Russell lit up and began to go into unprecedented detail about the who's, what's, and why's. Actually, surprise is too gentle a word. Shocked is more like it. The fact is, while rumors have circulated about precisely what happened when screenwriter Kevin Jarre was fired as director early in the production and was replaced by Rambo 2 director George Cosmatos, the cast and crew have been very close to the vest about specifics. Since the film was released in 1993, the shroud of silence concerning the picture has rarely afforded anyone much more than a glimpse of the real story, for reasons Russell, at last, made clear in a 20-minute conversation that took place in a suite of the Regent Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Los Angeles. Russell also discussed Kevin Costner's role in the production, both before the movie started and after the picture was wrapped, details of the financing and distribution, certain curious casting considerations, and the legendary missing footage that Tombstone lovers have been dreaming of seeing for 13 years. Henry Cabot Beck. The Tombstone scholars, Alan Barra, Bob Bozbell, and those guys, are getting together in Tombstone in October 2006 for the 125th anniversary of the OK Corral gunfight. Kurt Russell. Are they? That'll be fun. At one time, I really knew about Wyatt Earp because that movie, Tombstone, is one that's really worth talking about. That was the one time I had gone out and got the money. I backed the director. The director got fired, so we brought in a guy to be a ghost director. They wanted me to take over the movie. I said, I'll do it, but I don't want to put my name on it. I don't want to be the guy. I said to George Cosmatos, I'm going to give you a shot list every night, and that's what it's going to be. I'd go to George's room, give him the shot list for the next day. That was the deal. George, I don't want any arguments. This is what it is. This is what the job is. Yeah, absolutely. I got him from Sly Stallone. Called up Sly, said I needed a guy. Sly did the same thing with Rambo 2 with George, and I said to George, while you're alive, George, I won't say a goddamn thing. Cosmatos died April 19, 2005. And it was the hardest work of my life. Tombstone was so painful. Tombstone was so tough. You know what I mean? It was just so painful. It was hard physically to do. I got 4 hours sleep every night, and I'm so happy that we got it made. I didn't get a chance to edit the movie, which I thought was unfortunate because it could have been one of the greatest westerns ever, ever, ever made. And it's pretty damn good. We had a great cast, a phenomenal script. Some of the direction is terrific. There are great shots, especially the crane shot over Curly Bill, played by Powers Booth, when he exits the opium den. That's actually how good the script is. that shot is, there's no way not to do that shot. The movie demands it. The script demands it. But what's bad about the shot, if you look at it, is it's badly timed. We had no money. Bang. Half an hour later, the light breaks on the gunshot. Cut, print it, go on, move on, but it works. There's a lot of great stuff in Tombstone. Great actors who were in a very difficult situation, who I bought their trust by cutting myself out of the movie as an actor. There's stuff in that original script that if you were ever to read it, you'd go, oh, ho, ho. We needed to lose 20 pages. Kevin would never lose the 20 pages. He would never lose it. So once he was gone, there's only one way I'm going to get the trust of these actors, and that is to cut myself out of this goddamn movie and make some changes. Make Wyatt an Aura character. Aura? In other words, you meet him, you see him, you know who he is. When you see him step off the train, that's it. There's the guy. And then Doc Holliday flashes him out. I said, you're going to have all the acting stuff to do in this movie, and I'm going to make sure it gets done. And I saved most of everybody else's stuff to do. Because, in fact, I could do that with Wyatt. I knew the script extremely well. And I could do that with Wyatt because I was going to play him. I knew what I needed from the character in terms of the movie, in terms of making the movie work. But it wasn't fun to do that. It wasn't fun to cut out 8 of the reasons you wanted to do the movie. I was very disappointed with Kevin. I told Kevin he was going to get fired. I said, it's not working, and they're going to come in here and can you. And they did. It was a bad experience in that regard, but it was a great Tombstone mattered. The drama doesn't matter. All movies have their life. Some are easy and some are not. Laughs. Troubled movies are usually crap, but Tombstone comes out of all of that smelling like a rose. It was really hard. Plus, I was doing it on the sly. George and I had sign language going on. But you got along? Oh, yeah, very well. You had to. And he was terrific in selecting locations. But one day I came out there and the whole street is backwards. And EPK, Electronic Press Kit Production, i.e. documentary filmmakers, is out there that day. So I come out there and say, George, look at that. And he said, oh. And he had to turn it all around. But he was very good at selecting locations, and he did what he was supposed to do. Was it all shot in Old Tucson? Old Tucson, Mesquite, Dennis Lydiard, Russell's longtime makeup man, pipes up from the other room. Mescal! Is that what it was? Mescal? You want to talk about a book that I could write? I said, George, as long as you're alive, I'm not going to say a goddamn thing. But I could have cared less. All I cared about was the fact that the movie got made. The picture did surprising business. It was interesting, because when the movie got released, I read this great article in the LA Times about the phenomenon of Tombstone, how the studio was like shocked at what they had. They didn't know what to do with the movie. It was out there, and they were like, how are things going with Tombstone? They didn't promote it very much, didn't know what to do with it, didn't know where it was coming from. What's happening here? It was a Western. A Western! They didn't know anything, and it wasn't their baby. I'd gone and got $25 million from Andy Vanja to make the movie. Andy and I had been on a bicycle trip. That's where the relationship came from. A bicycle trip we did a couple of years earlier. He said, if you ever have a project. I said, fine. And my old agent at William Morris, I left my old agent. Do you remember when that shit was going down? And I was the last one to leave, actually. And I was over at CAA and did a couple of years later, 89. And my old agent called me up one day. There's a script that I'm aware of that you should do. But he said, there's a lot of politics involved here. Politics? At that time, Jar and Costner were going to make the movie. Then Costner decided he liked the idea of doing not Tombstone, but Wyatt Earp, with Kasdan writing it. And he gave the movie to Kevin with his best wishes, Good luck. I got the script from my old agent. Jar was with William Morris, and I thought it was a phenomenal script, and I called and said I wanted to do it. And they said, ooh, because Costner was at CAA with Ovitz, and there was the Kasdan Project, and blah, blah, blah. But CAA was great. They got us going. And when I went to Andy Vanja and got the money. And I went to my brother-in-law, Larry Franco, who produced 1,000 movies, and I asked, Larry, can I do this for $25 million? And he just looked at it, went through it, semi-budgeted it, and said, she just. At the time, Kevin Jarre was the guy. Kevin was going to direct it. Kevin was such a good writer, and it was such a good script. There was no reason not to back it. That was the start of it. And from there, the story just goes. You can't even imagine. We had one place, Disney, Buena Vista, we could be released. William Dafoe was going to do the movie, Doc Holliday. But Disney wouldn't release the picture with William Dafoe with him playing Doc Holliday. There was a time, do you remember Dennis Lydiard? It was 2 or 3 weeks before we started shooting. And I got a phone call from, I forget who. Anyway, I got a phone call, and it was just before Val was going to come on. We had to have a release. Costner had shut down all avenues of release for the picture except for Disney, except for Buena Vista. How? He was able to. He was powerful enough at the time, which I always respected. I thought it was good hardball. And that was the story, and some part of it was true. Because the only place we were going to release that picture was through Buena Vista. That much I knew. I was told by Kevin Jarre. Jarre said, we're dead in the water any place but Buena Vista. But he wanted to cast William Dafoe, who was absolutely brilliant in his conceptualization of it. He would have been good. He would have been phenomenal. But they came back, told Kevin Jarre, nope, you can go with Val Kilmer, but not Dafoe. So we said, we love Val Kilmer. Laughs. One of those things. But then Kilmer was great. Terrific. We spent a lot of time, thank you very much. But he's ever been, yeah, laughs. Wonder why. What I was going to say about Costner, really interesting. Oh, I remember. Just before they were going to do the deal with Val, I get a phone call to go see Andy Vanja, who sits me down, says, I want you to think about something. What would you think about playing Doc Holliday? I said, oh, that's interesting. I thought about that when I read the movie, but I think we're going to go the way we are, Andy says. Because I was kind of thinking of what would happen if you played Doc Holliday and Richard Gere played Wyatt Earp. Raucous laughter all around. I didn't know if that was something somebody had come up with that Andy had to consider. I didn't know what it was, but I actually had to sit there 2 weeks before we were starting, thinking, I got to think about a lot of things here. Man, this is not right. Laughs. I said, nah, I think we should just do what we got, make the movie. But that's great history. Maybe I should have said, sure, and I would have, like, got hit by a truck. And William Dafoe would have been back, and it would have been William Dafoe and Richard Gere. Huge laughs. Who knows? The world's crazy. You never know. What about the jar footage and all the cut parts people have been talking about? The shame about Tombstone that you can't possibly appreciate, although Andy Vanja did give me the tape of everything on the movie to, whenever I wanted to reconstruct the movie. The movie, what you saw, okay, is that movie. The movie is The Godfather, a Western Godfather. That's how different that movie is from the one you saw. So why don't you reconstruct it? Because I got a life. Someday I may do it. But I'd need to go back to the script, back to all my notes, have to find my notes. You know what I found the other day? Because I'm moving stuff. I found the last scene I wrote, the scene between Wyatt and Doc. The hospital scene. This is funny. This is funny. There was a great scene written by Kevin Jarre for that, but because of the things we had done, I was trying to lead to a different ending. as the interview was concluding and Russell's people were frantically trying to pry him away so that he could attend some evening event, I mentioned that some edited footage of the movie is supposed to be shown in Tombstone in October. Russell replied, "Well, I don't know what they've got, but all that stuff is put away in my garage, including an interesting scene that shows a deeper relationship between Wyatt Earp and the Cowboys. Who knows? Maybe sometime." True West Magazine, October 2023 edition. "Doc Hits Bottom, But Not Much Else," by Bob Bozbell. Doc Holliday versus Billy Allen. Doc Holliday is 10 feet tall and weighs a ton. The Arizona Daily Star. August 19, 1884. Broke, sick, and usually drunk, Doc Holliday hits rock bottom in Leadville, Colorado. Today, a fellow gambler, Billy Allen, is demanding Doc repay a $5 loan by noon, or else. The $5 was a pretext. Doc was the target of a group of gamblers. Afraid for his life, Doc goes to his room at 405 Harrison and retrieves his pistol, variously described as a Colt 41 or 44. He hands off the gun to someone, possibly his gambling pal, Pat Sweeney, who takes it to Manny Hyman's saloon at 316 Harrison. As it is against the law to carry the weapon inside, that person stores Doc's pistol for him under the bar. When Holliday reaches the saloon, he waits nervously by a cigar case next to the bar. He has already told the police about the situation, but he is worried Allen will catch up to him first. After a shoeshine, Allen enters Hyman's at about 5 p.m., with his hand suspiciously in his pocket. Doc quickly reaches down, grabs his pistol, leans over the cigar case, and fires. The first bullet hits the door casing above Allen, who turns to run, but trips and falls forward. Allen is flopping on the floor when a second shot hits him in the right arm, halfway between the shoulder and the elbow. Bartender Henry Kellerman leaps over the bar and grabs Doc as he attempts to get off a third shot. Police Captain Edward Bradbury comes running in, shouting, "Doc, I want your gun!" Doc surrenders his pistol to the captain, who arrests him. Aftermath, odds and ends. Arrested on a charge of assault with the intent to kill, Doc Holliday sat in the city jail until two friends signed his $5,000 bail bond. The police, meanwhile, made a quiet raid upon everybody who carries concealed weapons, reported the Daily Democrat on August 22nd. At the preliminary hearing on August 25th, Holliday testified he shot Billy Allen, adding, "I knew that I would be a child in his hands if he got a hold of me. I weigh 122 pounds. I think Allen weighs 170 pounds. The judge assigned Doc's case to criminal court and raised his bail to $8,000, only to reduce it to $5,000 due to Doc's poor health. Even so, Holliday had to wait in jail for over a week before his friends posted his bail. He was released the night of September 6th. The judge had scheduled the court date for December 23rd, but Holliday's lawyers successfully got a continuance until spring. The trial began March 27, 1885, almost 3 years to the day that Holliday and Wyatt Earp had confronted Curly Bill Brocius at Mescal Springs. After a short deliberation, the jury acquitted Holliday on the grounds that Allen's threats had justified the shooting. Allen apparently never got his $5. He remained in Leadville for a time before moving to Garfield County, where he served as a scout during the Ute Troubles of 1887. After stints in Chicago and Salt Lake City, Allen joined one of the Oklahoma land rushes, then settled in Cripple Creek, Colorado, where he became fire chief. In 1898, he went to Alaska, where he was appointed fire marshal and later deputy U.S. marshal in Nome. Allen died in Orting, Washington in 1941. True West Magazine, October 2023 edition. Pecos, Texas, by Peter Corbett. A cow camp grew up from a cattle trail crossroads. Picture Horsehead Crossing of the Pecos River with a herd of parched cattle stampeding to the water along its steep banks after a dusty 75-mile slog from San Angelo. It's 2 years after the Civil War, and this is the first of many cattle drives on the Goodnight Loving Trail. The drovers lost crushed cattle at the river crossing, and calves were left behind on the trail from San Angelo. Ultimately, they succeeded in driving the Texas Longhorns to Fort Sumner, New Mexico, and Colorado. That first cattle drive was around the 4th of July, and it must have been hotter than hell, Texas historian Kirby Warnock said. That dramatic chapter in Western history was the basis for Larry McMurtry's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, Lonesome Dove. The Pecos County Historical Commission considers Horsehead Crossing the second most iconic historical site in Texas, just after the Alamo. It was also a crossing for the Butterfield Overland Mail Stagecoach in 1858-61, and a stop on the Comanche Trail. The commission is sponsoring a Horsehead Crossing celebration at the Pecos River Ford on October 27th through the 29th. It's a rugged campout at the remote site. The nearby town of Pecos, northwest of the crossing, was a cow camp established with the arrival of the Texas and Pacific Railroad in 1881. Today, Pecos is a town of 13,000 that celebrates its frontier West Texas history. The Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Center are in the 142-year-old railroad depot that also houses a rodeo hall of fame. Pecos claims it's west of the Pecos Rodeo, first held July 4, 1883, is the world's first rodeo. It has run continuously since 1929. The West of the Pecos Museum occupies an 1896 saloon and the 1904 Orient Hotel. The three-story hotel exhibits of Native American artifacts and rodeo, ranching, and railroad memorabilia. Centennial Park in Pecos is home to a recreated Judge Roy Bean Saloon and Courthouse. Bean was a corrupt justice of the peace who dispensed frontier justice out of his Jersey Lily Saloon in Langtree, 180 miles southeast of Pecos. He proclaimed himself the only law west of the Pecos. The saloon had no jail. Judge Bean sent prisoners to Fort Stockton, the county seat of Pecos County, said Warnock, Pecos County Historical Commission Secretary. The city of Pecos is in nearby Reeves County, which causes confusion for outsiders interested in West Texas history. Visitors to Pecos may want to check out the historic attractions in nearby Fort Stockton, including the historic fort and the Annie Riggs Memorial Museum. Also worth a visit, just a 90-minute drive from Pecos, is Fort Davis National Historical Site, which was founded in 1854 to protect early travelers on the San Antonio to El Paso Road. In Western culinary history, Pecos is also home to the Frying Pan Ranch Chuckwagon. Stop by the west of the Pecos Museum to see the historic Scarborough Lineberry family's chuckwagon. It was used by the Scarborough family for more than a century. Evelyn and Tom Lineberry donated the working chuckwagon to the museum. Pecos visitors also might want to explore the city's boot trail. It includes nearly two dozen larger-than-life-size boots that have been decorated by different businesses and organizations. Stop by the Chamber of Commerce office to pick up a boot trail guide. Find all of the boots and get a stamp at each of the sponsoring businesses. Bring back the boot trail guide with all the stamps in it to pick up a Pecos prize. Lastly, don't miss the 77th annual Reeves County Fall Fair the weekend of October 7th.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.